With everything you have on your plate, earning your degree online seems impossible. But at Grand Canyon University, we specialize in helping you fit a master's degree in business into your busy day. Your graduation team, led by your own GCU counselor, provides you with the personal support you need to succeed. Achieve your goals with a plan and team behind you. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Visit gcu.edu.
You're a dreamer. You see the possibilities of chocolate and caramel flavors swirling together with cold brew, topped with a velvety chocolate cold foam and cocoa caramel crumbles. And that imagination can only be rewarded with Dunkin's new caramel chocolate cold brew. Participation may vary. Limited time offer. Terms apply.
Hey everyone, it's Billy Morrison and Ozzy Osbourne here. Our new show, The Madhouse Chronicles, is dropping this April. Join us as we watch and react to the maddest internet clips. What do we discuss, Ozzy?
Drugs, rock and roll, aliens, all that kind of shit.
Drugs, rock and roll, aliens, and all that kinds of shit. Visit osbornemediahouse.com for early access. What do you say? Do you think it's the wildest show on the internet?
You're in the madhouse now.
History tells the story of the world and of our lives. Sometimes that history goes bump in the night. Broadcasting from the center of oddity and the supernatural in Central Florida, it's the History Goes Bump podcast.
Hello, you spectacular people. Welcome to this 530th episode of the History Goes Bump podcast. Ghost tours for the theater of the mind. I'm your host, Diane.
And this is Kelly.
Kelly, on this episode, we're going to talk about an inn that was suggested to us by our listener, Stephen St. Amour, and it's named for an amazingly heroic woman, Kitty Knight.
Looking forward to it.
This is in Maryland, and of course, it has connections to the War of 1812, which we actually touched on in our little history. So a little bit of synchronicity there, I guess, with Sam Houston. Before we get into that, we want to welcome into the spectacular crew, Sarah with an H, Donna, Catherine with a C, and Krista.
Thank you for joining our spectacular crew.
And now this moment, Noddity.
The moment in Oddity was suggested by Michael Rogers. Little Debbie is a popular snack cake company, and just saying the name may make our listeners' mouths water. I know Diane is salivating as I read this. Their company was established in the 1930s by the McKee family and were featured as the official snack cake of the World's Fair in 1982. Through the years, the tasty pastries garnered all sorts of popularity, even producing a vinyl record in 1965 with the Little Debbie commercial jingle on one side and children's stories recorded onto the B-side. Today, if you visit Collegedale, Tennessee, you may just happen upon a most unique park. This is the Little Debbie Park, which features giant-sized Little Debbie snacks. The sculptures were created for children to play upon, and they include a huge cosmic brownie, oatmeal cream pie, and Christmas tree snack cake. The park is 10 acres in size and also features a large pavilion with restrooms, swings, benches, playground, and picnic tables. The acreage was donated to the city by the McKee Foods Corporation. Little Debbie snacks are iconic, but a park featuring giant-sized replicas of the tempting, tasty treats certainly is odd.
Road trip! Sounds like a little piece of heaven to me.
Indeed.
Kelly, we have two live shows planned. We're going to be hosting them with Hillbilly Horror Stories.
Yes, we are.
Right here in Florida. The first one is at Casadega. It's a spiritualist camp. And the location that we're actually hosting it at is a haunted location, Hotel Casadega.
Yep, definitely looking forward to it.
This will be on April 27th from 12 to 3 p.m. And it is a very small venue. We have 30 tickets. So don't think about this one. Get on it. And then the other one is in one of our favorite cities, St. Augustine. We're going to be doing it at the same location we did our previous live show in St. Augustine. And that is going to be on August 17th from 6 to 9 p.m.
Looking forward to that one as well.
Get your tickets. We have the links up in the Facebook Spooktacular Crew and also set up a link that you can get through Instagram as well.
Looking forward to seeing all our listeners' spooky little faces.
Yes.
And now, This Month in History.
In the month of March, on the 2nd, in 1793, Sam Houston was born in Rockbridge County, Virginia. As a teen, Sam ran away from home and spent 3 years living with the Cherokee, adopting the name Raven. During the War of 1812, Houston served under General Andrew Jackson. Despite his time spent with the Cherokee, Houston presided over the mass removal of the Cherokee from Tennessee. He was elected to the United States House of Representatives in 1823, and he heartily supported Andrew Jackson's presidential run. In 1827, Houston was elected governor of Tennessee, later resigning in 1829. Sam Houston moved to Texas in 1832 and led the Texan army to victory at the Battle of San Jacinto. Following that, he won the 1836 Texan presidential election. He played a vital role in the annexation of Texas and thus was elected to represent Texas in the United States Senate. In 1859, Houston won the independent vote for governor of Texas with a 56.8% to 43.1% margin. Sam Houston was forced out of office in 1861 after refusing to swear an oath of loyalty to the Confederacy. He died just 2 years later in 1863 and is honored in many ways. The city of Houston, which was named for him, being the most noteworthy.
Located along the Chesapeake Wine Trail and a scenic byway is the Kitty Knight Inn in Maryland. Kitty Knight was an amazingly brave woman who saved this house from destruction at the hands of the British. She went on to buy the house and apparently is still caring for it in the afterlife. Join us for the history and hauntings of the Kitty Knight Inn.
Galena is located on Maryland's upper eastern shore and is home to the inn. The town was originally named Downs Cross Roads when it was founded in 1763. The name was for early settler William Downs, who established a tavern in the town. The town later became Georgetown Crossroads and then eventually Galena, which is a type of silver extracted from lead ore. Town legend claims that a mine near the town had Galena extracted from it, but there's no actual record of this, so I'm not exactly sure why they got attached to that name. And there is also a Georgetown here, which is a little bit above it. So Georgetown continued to be used in the area. Galena is also home to the 301 Devil's Playground haunted attraction.
Ooh.
Yeah, I put in, are there other haunted locations in Galena other than the inn? And this popped right up. And man, does it look amazing. As a matter of fact, this attraction is Maryland's number one haunted attraction. And this is a little town, and it's got their number one haunted attraction in the whole state. It has four areas: House of Hell, 3D Phobia, which is a 3D blacklight experience, the Barn of Torture, and the Harvest.
Oh, my.
Now, the Harvest sounds like the tamest of all of these, but then when you think about what's at harvesting, souls?
Exactly. Body parts?
Yeah.
Organs?
So, hey, guys, plan a visit. Go to the haunted attraction and make sure to book a room at the Kitty Knight Inn. Then you can get some kind of fake haunted stuff and then maybe the real deal. The Kitty Knight Inn is a tribute to a woman who made a name for herself during the War of 1812.
In 1803, the Napoleonic War started between France and England.
To stick a thumb in the eye of England, Napoleon negotiated the Louisiana Purchase with America, giving the new country all the French territory west of the Mississippi River. This helped build tensions between England and the United States. On top of that, Britain was boarding American ships and forcing the men aboard into conscription with their military. Britain needed more bodies because they were having trouble with desertion. Congress responded with demanding reparations and a cessation of impressment of Americans. They also expelled British ships from American waters. And then they passed the Embargo Act of 1807 to help avoid war, which eventually would come with the War of 1812. That war lasted for almost 3 years and didn't accomplish much for any side. But there were many stories that spawned from this conflict, and several are connected to the state of Maryland, like the writing of the national anthem and the valiant tale about Kitty Knight.
Yeah, I'd forgotten that the national anthem came out of the War of 1812. A lot of people think it was the Revolutionary War, and right here in Maryland at Fort McHenry, which I wonder if that's haunted. We'll have to check into that.
Definitely.
As a matter of fact, it is. There are several ghosts there. Put it on the list, Diane.
Catherine Knight, who also spells her name with a C, just like Catherine, who joined us in the Spooktacular crew, she was known to everybody as Kitty. It's believed that she was born in 1775 to John and Catherine Knight, so she was named for her mother. I love that. They were both very active in the area. Kitty was said to be a beautiful woman who was tall and graceful. Her family was prominent, with her uncle serving in the General Assembly and as a member of the United States House of Representatives. And so when a ball was hosted in Philadelphia during a session of the Continental Congress, she attended. George Washington was one of the men who punched her card for a dance.
Oh my.
Yes. Anger was growing in the area, just as it was on much of the East Coast towards the British. As we pointed out here, we've got a lot of these hostilities going. And of course, I'm sure there was stuff still carrying over from the Revolutionary War as well. President Monroe and Congress declared war on Britain in June of 1812. Maryland wouldn't get much attention until the spring of 1813. The British had their eyes on the Chesapeake Bay. Britain saw this as a den of thieves and pirates.
Baltimore gets most of the attention in Maryland when it comes to the War of 1812, but the Eastern Shore was very involved and paid a heavy price with 2 battles, 7 skirmishes, and 14 British raids. Whole towns were burned to the ground. This is what would happen in the Galena area. Turner's Creek was a village of about 60 people that was an important port for flour and grains. British Rear Admiral George Cockburn had a plan to squelch any resistance in Maryland. He would severely punish any resistance. On May 6, 1813, he landed several barges on the small village of Turner's Creek and told the residents that if they cooperated, they would be left unharmed. The British loaded up on supplies and claimed that they paid full value for those supplies. A man named John Stavely was forced to be a guide up the Sassafras River to Fredericktown, Georgetown, and Galena.
And I just want to point out that Fredericktown is different than Frederick, Maryland. They're two different places.
Local militia fired on the British from both sides of the Sassafras River. They were quickly overcome and retreated to Fort Duffy. Fort Duffy no longer exists, but a memorial marker was erected listing the names of the men. Because all of those towns resisted, Cockburn turned them to ash, save for a few locations in Galena, because he met a brave woman, Kitty Knight.
So the British went on to the Galena area, and they were marching to a hill where 2 brick houses sat, along with a church. We aren't sure if Kitty lived at one of the houses that ran as a boarding house, or if she was just protecting 2 of the homes in her community. But as the British approached, she stood her ground. A sick and destitute elderly woman lived in one of the houses, and the British started to put flame to it when Kitty rushed up and stamped out the flames. She declared to Admiral Cockburn, "I shall not leave. If you burn this house, you burn me with it." The British attempted again to burn the house, and she stamped the flames out again. Her heroism greatly affected Cockburn, and he ordered his men to stand down. He directed them to load up the barges, and the group left, leaving the church and 2 houses unburned. Kitty later bought the house that now bears her name in 1836. When she passed at the house in November of 1855, a newspaper wrote, "Her heroism at the burning of Georgetown, she saved several families from being made homeless and friendless by the fire and sword. She was buried at St. Francis Xavier Shrine Cemetery. I just think this is absolutely amazing. I love the story that she stamped the flames out twice.
Definitely.
I don't know exactly if they just like lit up part of a porch or something and she managed to get it out, or started a roof and she, you know, hit it with something. But initially she's coming out and is like, there is a sick woman in here. We cannot get her out.
Right.
So don't burn the house. And I don't know if they didn't believe her or if they didn't care. I mean, obviously they didn't want to burn her with it. And so I guess he just looked at her and was like, you know, it's not really worth it.
Well, thank goodness.
Yes.
Sue Ann Hall bought the inn in 2018 from Ford and Ralph Hall. Jamestown Hospitality Group owns the property today. The two houses on the hill that were saved were joined together in the 1930s. The older one was known as the Archibald Wright House and was built between 1773 and 1783. A white plank fence leads up the hill to the three-story red brick inn with columns. The Kitty Knight Inn was probably built in 1800 and was known as the William Henry House. The inn was recently renovated and features 11 guest rooms. Along with the rooms, there is the Deep Blue Restaurant that also is an event venue. And there is the ghost.
Or maybe several of them. April Doty, who's the director of marketing for the Jamestown Hospitality Group, said, "We definitely have chatter about the house being haunted. Guests say that doors will shut, or you'll hear voices when no one is there. While it's always exciting to view the findings of paranormal investigation teams, the haunting of Kitty Knight remains a mystery. The house embraces the hauntings and not only has had members of the Mid-Atlantic Paranormal Project, otherwise known as MAPP, come and investigate the inn several times, but the group hosts public investigations. Our listener Stephen, who suggested this location, participated in one of those hunts. He wrote, "We stayed there for a paranormal investigation and it was very active. Cat balls and flashlights lighting up on request. It has at least four spirits to include Kitty Knight herself." He shared a picture of one of the cat balls going off. Theirs is kind of cool. It had like purple coloring to it. Ours are like blue and red, I think.
Interesting.
Yeah. So I was like, oh, where do we get the purple one? But yeah, it was definitely across the room, sitting on a table, nobody near it. So unless they were jumping on the floor to get it to go, something was going on there.
Tony Avalone is the founder of the MAP team, and he said, "We strongly believe that there's a presence that could be Kitty Knight herself. The group feels her presence most prominently in the room that bears her name, and was apparently her actual room at one time. Avalone has overnighted in the room and had unexplained occurrences happen." He shared, "Our team investigated the room all night, and I ended up sleeping in the bed after we wrapped at around 3:30 a.m. At about 6:30 a.m., I woke up feeling a tugging, and I was freezing cold. I could see my breath. The thermostat was entirely off, but when we watched the footage, no one had touched it. The rest of the inn was at a normal temperature."
You were in her bed. She was going to get you out of there, so she figured she'd freeze you out.
No kidding.
The team has picked up orbs that they believe are supernatural in origin because the orbs seem to move without purpose, and a couple have had distinct human features. Another spirit that they believe is in the house belongs to a child, and they've played ball with it, rolling the ball back and forth. And children are heard laughing and crying down in the basement. So I don't know if, like, the four spirits that they say are here, if, like, Kitty Knight and then the rest are children, apparently, maybe. And now a little break for a word about one of our sponsors.
Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.
Hey everyone, it's Billy Morrison and Ozzy Osbourne here. Our new show, The Madhouse Chronicles, is dropping this April. Join us as we watch and react to the maddest internet clips. What do we discuss, Ozzy?
Drugs, rock and roll, aliens, all that kinds of shit.
Drugs, rock and roll, aliens, and all that kinds of shit. Visit OsbourneMediaHouse.com for early access. What do you say? Do you think it's the wildest show on the internet?
Oh. You're in the madhouse now.
A A Washington Post article from 1992 by Mary Z. Gray talks about the haunts in Kent County, and the inn came up. She wrote, "In recent years, the manager's husband found the bathroom door blocked after he had showered. He was alone in the house. With great effort, he got the door open and found that a large TV set had been pushed against it. Later, a guest locked his door, only to see it open by itself, the hall light streaming in. He locked it again, propping a chair against it. When it opened once more, knocking over the chair, he packed his bags and left."
Wow, this is a pretty strong spirit. It's moving a TV set, because I'm assuming that's back in the day, maybe, not like our lighter sets.
Yeah, an old tube TV.
Because one of our types of TVs isn't really going to block the door much. It's just going to push it over. But a big tube TV, that would be some effort to move that.
Yeah, it's pretty heavy.
And then opening a door against a chair propped against it?
And knocking the chair over.
Yeah, that makes me think, because I don't know that you could push a door that has a chair wedged up against it hard enough to knock the chair out. So it almost seems like they had to like move the chair physically, throw it down on the ground, and then open the door.
Well, maybe, but also, it didn't say that they, you know, the old TV show where you prop it under the doorknob kind of thing. It didn't say that they did that. It just had a chair against it.
Oh, okay. So. That's true.
But still, that's a lot of effort.
Yeah. I assume that he'd put it like under the doorknob. But
you're going back to the old movies.
Yes. But I mean, you could be right. He might have just put it there so that if it tried to open, it wouldn't swing open very wide. Still interesting that it would knock the chair over onto the floor.
Absolutely.
Horror Zine's media director Trish Wilson spent a couple nights at the Kitty Night, and here are her experiences. "I awakened to a great deal of noise coming from the room next to mine. It sounded like a party was going on in there. Too tired and embarrassed to complain, I checked the clock for the time, 2:30 a.m., and then tried to go back to sleep. I was surprised there was so much noise. It seemed odd to me, as if something were wrong, but I couldn't put my finger on exactly what that was. I wanted to say something about the noise, but I was too timid to speak up. I didn't want to cause any trouble, and I didn't want to come across as a stick in the mud. If it's 2:30 in the morning, I have done this when I'm staying at a motel and people are yelling outside my door in the middle of the night like that. I have gotten up, opened the door, and told them to shut up.
Yep, same.
I mean, if I'm sleeping and you wake me up and I'm upset, I don't care if I sound like a stick in the mud. I awakened again at about 4 a.m. The inn was uncannily quiet. The partygoers must have checked out for the night or passed out. That could be. I felt a chill of excitement and a little fear as I pulled the blankets and sheets up to my chin. What if I encountered something in the dead of night, alone, in my room? What would I do or say? I'd often read that the best thing to do when confronted by a spirit is to ask what it wanted. I was far too frightened to even think of doing anything of that kind. I'd read books by legendary ghost hunters, Hans Holzer and Elliot O'Donnell. Holzer worked with a medium who helped troubled spirits move on to the afterlife so they were not trapped on this plane. In my experience, demonic themes like those found in the Conjuring movies and the Amityville Horror weren't very common at that time. Ghosts were more often seen as sad, lost souls who were mostly harmless, so I felt safe and quite thrilled.
Momentarily, I heard footsteps walking down the hallway away from my room. Who would be wandering about the halls at this late hour? Whoever it was took heavy steps as if wearing boots.
Which does not make me think that it's Kitty Knight.
Was it a guest of the inn or a ghost? I wasn't about to open my door to find out. If it was Miss Kitty, she had a heavy step as if she wanted to be sure I knew she was there. While I felt frightened and very excited, I did not feel in danger. According to the legend, Miss Kitty wandered about the halls at night to check on her guests. I suppose she was satisfied I was squared away in my room. Early the next morning, I showered, packed, and walked downstairs to check out. I told the woman at the front desk about the party going on in the room next to mine and how loud it was. She gaped at me with a deer-in-the-headlights expression on her face. She said I couldn't have heard a party. I was alone in the building all night. The prickly things ran up and down my spine. I had experienced a ghostly phenomenon.
I mean, it's one thing to be like, well, the people that are here in the inn with you, they didn't complain and I didn't hear anything myself or something like that. But when it's like, you are literally the only person in this building.
Right.
And it's amazing to hear something that's loud enough that clearly it woke her up. And then it was going on so much that she's like, wow, it is really loud.
Well, what's interesting to me is Horror Zine is the magazine,
mm-hmm.
and she's the media person. And so clearly she's into that kind of stuff, but she didn't want to go investigate.
No. I would have loved if she had actually been like, I'm going to go over there and tell them to quiet down. And then if she knocked on the door and it just became deathly quiet.
True.
Because even if it's a raging party, it's not going to just all of a sudden shut up and nothing's going to happen after you knock on the door. And then, of course, I would assume that you would see that there's no light coming from underneath the door.
Right.
So be like, it's dark in there, huh? So you should have gotten out of bed and gone to tell him to shut up.
Exactly.
If she'd done what I'd done, she would have figured out, wait a minute, something's going on here. Well, I would love to believe I'd encountered one hell of a haunting. I was aware that the kitchen was downstairs from my room. Most likely I heard the kitchen staff cleaning up for the night after dinner service had ended. At 2:30 in the morning, I can tell you that is not true.
Right.
If there's not a bar there, I would think that they would keep it a little bit quiet because there's an inn here, so. It was very late, though. Later than I expected the kitchen staff to still be in the building, so what if? What were those footsteps I heard clomping down the hallway? I'd not imagine them. Even if the party was the staff cleaning up, I heard those footsteps moving just outside my room. Thrilled that I had a wonderful haunting experience to talk about after so many years of my own private investigations, I wanted to return.
See, and again, she would do private investigations, so why didn't she have her stuff to investigate at this location?
I don't know. I mean, she didn't say. Did she realize that it was? Well, no, she said that she'd heard that it was haunted, so I don't know. And return I did with my husband. Our day at the Kitty Knight house was uneventful. We enjoyed a delicious dinner and gazed at the beautiful view of the Sassafras River. The patio was closed because it was nearly winter, but we did walk outside. I'd enjoyed coffee on the patio the first time I'd stayed. We stayed in the same room I had during my first time at the inn. I was afraid we'd end up leaving and not experience anything, but I was happy to return. We watched a little TV and then went to sleep.
I snapped awake in the middle of the night when someone or something had turned on the overhead light.
So this is not a party now. This is like, I definitely want to make sure I wake you up.
I'm a very light sleeper, so that light turning on woke me up immediately. It was eerily quiet, which made the hairs on the back of my neck stand on end. I remembered my husband had turned off the light before we retired for the night. I was too tired to get up and turn it off, so I ignored it and went back to sleep. Again, you're a paranormal investigator.
Get up and start investigating.
They were clearly trying to get your attention.
Yep.
I awakened shortly before dawn, and the light had been switched off. The next morning, I asked my husband if he had turned the light off before going to bed. He said he had. He had not turned it back on at all during the night. Who had turned on that light? And who came back and turned it off?
I also heard those steps in the hallway again, just like my first visit. There were people staying in the inn that night, so it could have been anyone. However, those were the same heavy footfalls I heard the first time around. Was Miss Kitty looking after me again? I recalled reading that her ghost had a habit of flicking on and off the light switches in addition to wandering about the hallways at night. I haven't been back to the Kitty Knight house since, but I would enjoy a return visit. I felt comfortable, safe, and curious. Whether or not my ghostly experiences were real, the inn was beautiful and welcoming. I'd like to think I experienced a haunting. I'm satisfied that I had. And what a haunting it was. Ghosts enjoying a party in the room next to me? Phantom footsteps? Lights turning on and off in the middle of the night? I couldn't have asked for a more thrilling stay. If Yelp were around, I'd have given the Kitty Knight house a great review, ghosts and all. That's why we always tell locations, tell people about your haunting.
Right. Less than 5 miles away in Millington, there is a crybaby bridge. This version claims that a mother gave birth to a deformed baby and she threw him off the bridge. The child later began to haunt the bridge and the forest near it by knocking over trees with crying fits. Any fallen trees are blamed on him. This area near the Sassafras River sounds beautiful, and the inn sounds like a great place to enjoy it. And some ghosts. Is the Kitty Knight Inn haunted?
That is for you to decide. Well, Stephen said it was a great place to stay. Any of you in Maryland, go check it out. The Chesapeake Bay area sounds like a great place. I've only kind of driven through Maryland, never stayed there. We need to get up there and check out some of these haunted locations.
Definitely.
And of course, Poe is, you know, right there in Baltimore. So,
right.
We'd love to have you guys check out our website at historygoesbump.com. And if you'd like to send us some feedback, you can do that at historygoesbump@gmail.com. We did hear from one of our listeners that we had welcomed recently on an episode, and I tried my best to say his name correctly. I got close, he said. I put the emphasis in the wrong places because I said Kailato, and it's Kailato, I believe is how it should be. But what's really cool is he let me know that it's Shawnee. His dad was full blood. His name means one standing.
Love that.
Yeah, I thought that was an absolutely great name. And then interestingly, we always tell people, you know, if you want to suggest a place, we first say, why don't you Google it along with the name of the podcast to see if we've already done it. And he had suggested Wright-Patterson Air Force Museum. And I was like, oh, we already did that. So I went in to Google because I do the same thing because I don't remember which episodes are which.
Right. We only have a few.
So I Googled it to see what episode number it was so I could let him know that we had done it. And when I went in to Google it and saw that it was episode 473, all these news stories popped up with it. And so I looked down and I was like, oh, no. There were several stories that a tornado had damaged several buildings at the museum. And that was right here in February of 2024.
Oh, wow. And we produced it February of 2023, right?
Yes. So that was the twist of synchronicity. Because at first I was like, oh, my gosh, how horrible that they had a tornado come through there. I hadn't heard about that. And then when I glanced to see the date when we dropped the episode, it was in February. So I was like, there we go with our synchronicity here at Always. History Goes Bump. He suggests a location that we did February of last year, 2023. And then this year, when I go to look it up, there were tornadoes that hit in February of 2024.
I hope everybody was okay.
Yeah, I didn't see that anybody got hurt, but several of the buildings did get damaged. Thank you for making that suggestion. We love getting your guys' suggestion just like this one. And most of the shows that we are doing this year have been suggestions. I actually have everything planned out for the entire year because I'm like, you know what? This is our 10th year of production. I am going to go back through the emails and I'm going to grab them all out of there that we have not done and they're going to get done this year. Some of them are getting kind of pushed into next year too a little bit because I have some other things that come up that I'm like, oh, I really want to do that too. So we're intermingling stuff, but you are going to find that most of the episodes this year are going to be suggested by you guys. I want to thank you guys for tuning in to this episode. I've been your host, Diane.
And this has been Kelly.
You take care now.
Bye-bye.
This episode has been brought to you by our executive producers.
Dispatches from the Grave Digger.
We want to welcome into the cemetery, JS. We're going to be burying you under a marble headstone.
Thank you so much for supporting History Goes Bump.
Have a spooky experience that occurred at an historic location? Want to give us feedback or have a suggestion for the show? Share it with us at historygoesbump@gmail.com.
That was your belly.
No, it wasn't.
It wasn't mine.
It wasn't mine either.
Well, I don't know.
It sounded
what it
like
was.
Your guts.
I didn't even feel it. How weird. It sounded it was, like it was coming from over
I
there.
I didn't feel it either, but.
Is it Frankenstein growling?
It's like ventriloquist gut.
The acreage was donated to the city by the McKee Foods In 1803, the Napoleonic War started between France and England.
That sounds weird.
Yeah, because your France got stuck on your roof of your mouth.
Turner's Creek was a village of about 60 people that was an important port for...
important port.
Getting your peas out today.
Important port.
I'm glad I said getting your peas, not getting your pee out today.
No, I did that earlier.